Track 5. Damn the Torpedoes. Another painting in Case 112 is right under Dred Scott's portrait, the Battle of Mobile Bay, Alabama. Unlike the cavalry charge painting, this painting is small. You'll need to come right up to it. I'll fill you in on this final naval battle of the Civil War. But first, start simple. Count the ships and categorize them. Notice an obvious clue for distinguishing Union ships from Confederate ones, important not just to an observer, but to the combatants. Union ships, of course, fly the stars and stripes, and each one has several flags. The Confederate side-wheeled ships are greatly outnumbered, only 3 on the bottom left, and are belching black smoke from their smokestacks, as opposed to the 10 or more Union ships exploding large white puffs from their guns. By the way, in what direction are all those white cloud-like gusts blowing? Off to the left means they were blowing in the faces of the artillerymen, lined up, tiny figures we can barely distinguish, trying unsuccessfully to defend the fort on the left side of the painting. The wind was blowing that way that day, August 5th, 1864, helping the Union ships in their attack on the fort. And the New York City painter Julian Oliver Davidson was keenly attuned to details like that when he did this painting. But let's look at those ships flying U.S. colors. Divide them into 2 groups to get at an important story about the Civil War, that it was, in many ways, an old-fashioned war, but at the same time, to profound and drastic effect, a modern war. In the cavalry charge painting, we saw the old-fashioned swords, yet we also saw the more modern-looking pistol that could kill an adversary at close range. Look at the 2 kinds of Union ships. They were positioned to work together so they could fire at the fort and at the same time be unharmed by the fort's cannons and each other's guns. What you've noticed is that the column of ships furthest from the fort are sailing ships with 3 or 4 tall masts each, standard wooden-hulled warships, their guns firing into the fort. They have that romantic look to us of a bygone era. They've been positioned as the outside column because the new ships, ironclad monitors, were impervious to the fort's cannons. The steam-powered ironclads on the inside column were the newest in naval warfare, not only with armor to protect them, but with a revolving gun turret on the deck, and the whole ship semi-submerged in a design anticipating submarines. Lying low in the water, they were beneath the firing range of the outside column of wooden-hulled ships. But what about that one Union ironclad that's been hit? The Confederates had placed mines in the bay to protect the harbor from Union ships trying to enforce a blockade. Before this battle, Mobile was the only port left that the South still controlled. Without Mobile, the South couldn't get its supplies. When one of the ironclads headed to where the mines were planted, it got hit and went down. Admiral Farragut, the commanding officer, had to decide whether to call off the fleet's attack, fearing the other ships would be blown up by other mines, or torpedoes, as they were called then. Perhaps seeing that the army had already exploded the fort itself made up his mind. He told the entire fleet of wooden-hulled and ironclad ships he wasn't going to stop now. His words, "Damn the torpedoes, full steam ahead," have become a rallying cry which Americans use in all kinds of situations.